Hello and welcome to Brands Over Brews, your weekly chat with marketing and business leaders who are shaping the future of the industry. I'm your host, Pat Cooper. Each episode, we'll explore the strategies, insights, and personal stories of our guests. Let's get started. On today's episode, we have Alex Devine. Alex is a marketing and business consultant providing a unique bridge between old school business ideas and new generational perspectives. In her straightforward style, she motivates teams to act with empathy and understanding. As the president of VSG Marketing, a Spindustry company, Alex uses technology and data insights to help companies and individuals define their sales strategy and manage their digital presence. After nearly a decade in the heart of a fast-paced agency, she gained expertise in high-level marketing strategy, sales enablement, digital performance, and MarTech. Alex leads a VSG marketing team and provides executive oversight to all service offerings in addition to making sure clients remain at the cutting edge of our other industries. Alex, it is great to have you on the show today.
Hi, Pat. Thanks for having me.
So to kick off our conversation, what is your go-to brew?
Go-to brew. Well, before, you know, a certain time of the day, if I'm still drinking coffee, I actually have an insane addiction to coffee. My go-to every morning is 4 shots of espresso, and then I dump a protein shake into it. It's profi.
Okay.
Change your life. It's amazing. Get your base, you know, 42 grams in the morning, and then I have an afternoon coffee. I drink coffee sun up to sundown for sure.
I love that. No, I pump my coffee full of sugar, so I'll have to maybe add in some protein too, because
yeah.
Mostly just downing an healthy amount of sugar. So yeah, that's a great recommendation. I'll have to give that a try.
It helps. It really helps. Yeah. People, I make all my friends do it. Everyone's on profies now. Everyone's lost, you know, 20 pounds, feeling great. You just get your protein intake. Keeps you full all day. Don't have to eat till lunch.
That's all you need. Skip breakfast. Just go straight for the protein.
Yes, super healthy. Not disordered eating at all.
No, not at all. So to dive into our first topic today, Alex, something that we wanted to talk about was the integration of sales and marketing teams and how they should be working hand in hand, because you'll hear it from a lot of different people, whether or not sales and marketing should be working together. And there comes that term of smarketing. And of course, you know, people like us, we probably think, yeah, sales and marketing should be working closely together because that will deliver the best business outcomes. But how should they be working together, if at all?
It's a great question. It's a topic I'm very passionate about because I started my career as a marketer. And then as I've kind of risen through the ranks at the company, I'm inherently in business development. I've become a salesperson. So I get both sides, and I've worked with hundreds and hundreds of businesses. And it's so frustrating because leadership, specifically sales leadership, just tends to silo themselves. So nope, marketing has their stuff and they're supposed to support us. They're going to go over there and do whatever. And that includes data and technology completely separate, and then our sales team has our stuff, and they beef. I really don't know why. I think it's several things. Marketing is trying to do their best to support sales, and without access to certain information that they demand, it's harder to do smart marketing. And then sales teams are just notoriously very bad at data cleanliness and logging things effectively. But they should be working hand in hand, and the reasoning is very simple. We have to look at the funnel of success from the first time a customer experiences our brand all the way through the sales process to service delivery to onboarding to, you know, 3 years later when it's time for them to renew, for example. And so if we don't have data points about that person consistently all the way through, none of our processes can get better. So biggest example I see of that is marketing automation platforms and CRMs not talking to one another. So frustrating because the marketers don't have the information they need to hone messaging, use dollars efficiently, get you more opportunities, sales team. And then the sales team can't get a full picture of the client's entire journey. You know, what they were originally searching for, what search term caught their eye, what they interacted with on the website that could potentially shorten their sales cycle and get to close faster, or maybe turn a close lost into a closed one. So the data supports marketing and sales teams being integrated, it's just going to be a better experience overall and get you to close faster. But there is a kind of interpersonal resistance to that that's quite fascinating. So something that I love to do is go in and build dashboards if you can. Like sometimes the biggest issue is the systems are so siloed, we just don't have the data to pull key insights from, or it takes us a week to compile reports. But if you do have systems that talk to one another, a shared dashboard, look at this group, they saw this ad, they converted on this form, they talked to the salesperson wowed them with these questions, they closed on X date. Let's go duplicate that 10X. That's where kind of the magic happens.
Yeah, I love hearing how you build dashboards for both teams together. That's really nice. In previous roles, when I worked with sales, I would always be told, no, don't talk to them. Like, leave them in the corner. Don't talk to them. Don't look at
them.
They're
on calls.
Don't. Yeah. And it was just a really poor experience. But when you bring the two together, you know, marketing is going to provide the resources that users need to convert, and sales are going to have the resources they need to convert those users into paying customers. It's a nice flow. Like, it doesn't have to be so resistant to each other.
Yes. And there's so many good tools out there now where so much of that is automated, and you can have at a glance dashboard reporting in your Monday morning sales meeting. You can pull up exactly what's working and what's not. And then you don't have to have these big board meetings or meeting of the mind in your C-suite every quarter saying, what's marketing doing and what's sales doing? You know, in real time, you can make micro adjustments and move about your business and continue to be successful. So it is a barrier that has real implications for people's bottom line. So sales and marketing should go together. That's my soapbox speech for today.
Yes, no, like a PBJ sandwich, like they should be working
for sure.
Well with each other. Absolutely. So you had talked about marketing automation. Obviously, there's all new technology being rolled out in 2024. Mm-hmm. So how does this type of technology, especially new emerging technology, enable us to streamline marketing campaigns and business efforts, maybe even how that applies to that marketing and sales mix?
Yeah, it really does. It's a great segue, because those teams should be integrated. Really, the point of the integration is to know the customer as well as humanly possible, to have the most detailed, you know, specific personas that we can possibly have. And that's all the way through to service delivery. Who is our audience? What do they care about? How are we providing value? So once we know that, and technology and data really helps us paint that picture, then automation should be a way to scale communication outward to that perfect persona and deliver, you know, the perfect message to the perfect person at the perfect time, because that's when conversion happens. So a lot of times people are scared of automation because they have a personal experience, or it's all about, no, we are very personal with our clients. Amazing. Right. You can be very, very personal with marketing automation if your data is clean. We're going to talk about that next. It is personal, but it allows you to send a personal, perfect message to like thousands more people at once. So automation scales our efforts in our perfect personas, I think, number one, as a baseline. However, the automation landscape is changing a lot because of compliance and a lot of data privacy laws. I don't know how familiar you are with like the new policies and legislation and iOS changes that are coming, but we're just going to have access to less and less and less tracking information than we ever have as marketers, because it's wonderful as a consumer. I'm going to get to toggle on and off what I allow marketers to track. And that's email clicks. That's cookies are going to go away entirely. That's why we moved to GA4. You know, there's so much change going on in the marketing technology industry that's going to limit the data points we used to have. There's still tons of data, but we're going to have to think about success in a much different way. And technology is going to be necessary to do that.
Yeah, I agree there. With Google's updates from last year, cookies are going away and first party mm-hmm. data is going to become king or queen. And it's a little worrying too, because Google's saying, hey, listen to us. We know we have the data. We're not going to tell you too much about it, but you should definitely be using it. I've noticed that a lot for Performance Max campaigns on Google Ads, yep. where it's a little messy, and advertisers are definitely a little wary about tapping into that sort of ad product.
Yeah.
Are you worried about technology, you know, taking over sort of the business and sales world? Because Google did have a big layoff of their sales team with new automation and stuff like that. I know that we all want to say that it's going to bring in new jobs. It's going to help lift the weight of some redundant roles. But are we, you know, worried at all about bringing in more automation and AI?
That's such a, it's a great question. At this point, no, because one, people are so hesitant to onboard technology and use it properly. I think it's going to take us another decade or so to figure it out and really get adoption. People are resistant to it. They really are, even though it scales their efforts and there's good things about it. So I do think it offers more jobs in a more maybe meaningful way. AI, I run an agency. That's the hottest topic for the last 3 years. AI. The way I think about it is AI should save you. It should be a draft. It should save you time. It should scale your efforts. But it, at its core, does not replace human intelligence, human relationship. It's a tool in our arsenal that we should absolutely use. Even as it gets smarter, it's still, you know, not going to replace the adaption and the innovation and the speed at which a human brain can compute and relate to people. So all of these tools that we've talked about are just that. There are baseline that help us do more with less, which is a really critical thing in this economy. So we are seeing less and less and less marketing, traditional marketing jobs. I think they're just going to transform into learning those technologies, using them for a personal touch. But there's still this element of creativity and relationships that I don't think will ever go away in sales. In fact, the community at large is demanding a more consultative sales approach, and that takes people, but technology is going to empower them.
Yeah, I agree there. I think that the longer companies and brands take to implement this sort of technology, the worse it's going to be on their teams, because they're going to hit a point where it's going to be too late and you need like all that automation to take over, and there's going to be a whole disruption in their workforce. I think that early adoption is always best. Even if you don't fully embrace it across everywhere, getting your hands on that sort of technology and figuring out where to tap into it and how to scale that sort of integration is important.
It's critical, because you are going to miss the bus. That's a great point. And it's going to be, you're going to have to truly start from scratch, because you will not be able to use the data that you have, because it's not yours and you don't have rights to it. You don't have consent to use it. So if we're not mining first party data now, you're late. You've missed the bus almost at this point. Yeah, you're way late.
I completely agree there. And that actually is a great segue into our next topic, which is data readiness and governance. So first off, what does that mean? And second, how are brands embracing that right now, and what needs to be improved?
Oh, a loaded question. They're not embracing it. They're not prepared, but I'll talk a little bit about. So when we talk about data readiness, it is the speed at which you will be able to use marketing automation or CRMs, any MarTech. If you have a database that is clean, meaning the fields in your database are filled out, I have people's first name, I have their last name, I have their email, it's correct. Their sales amounts that they did with me are correct. Their birthday in my system is correct. Whatever you're going to use data for to automate long term, you have to make sure the fields are filled out correctly. And if we haven't been very diligent in how we entered that data, looking at you, sales teams, like if we aren't on top of it and make sure all that data is clean, you have these massive databases of thousands and thousands of people, and you can't trust that data. You can't plug and play it into automation. And then you're going to either piss people off, you're going to be out of compliance. There's a lot of bad things that can happen. So data readiness is purely us asking the question, do you have data stored somewhere securely? Is that data clean? Is it accurate? Can we trust it when we put it into a machine? So there are data readiness strategies. There are data readiness audits. People can help you figure out if you are data ready. Now, let's say you're data ready. You have to stay data ready, because that data lives and breathes and changes almost daily, even up to the second in some cases. So data governance is a plan and strategy and methodology and process for keeping that data ready and clean. And you should have a data readiness plan, and you should have a data governance plan. If you don't have one, consultants can help you figure that out. I'm trying to think of like a practical example. If you onboarded marketing automation tomorrow and you wanted to send the simplest automation of all time, you just wanted to say happy birthday to your customers, just think about the list. Where does it exist? Where would I pull it? And are all the dates correct? And typically the people that I talk to using the birthday situation hypothetically, because it's much more complicated than that. They're like, oh yeah, yeah, we have that. And then they go to find it and we don't actually have it. Or maybe it wasn't updated since 2017. Or I have about 30% of the people in my database's birthdays. Okay, perfect. You can't send a very good automated email then, can you? You know, so it's, you're not data ready at that moment. That's a practical application of that.
Yeah, and I think not being data ready is so important. When I worked with an agency, one of the clients was running a lead gen program. And one, when we started getting leads in, they were like, hey, where's this data being stored? And I said, great question. Where is it being stored? I don't know that. You should know that. You should know where you're keeping your data, because that's such a security risk, right? Like, you're collecting all this information and you don't know where it is. And two, it was, what do we do with this data? Like, what do we do with these names and phone numbers and email addresses? And I'm like, well, one, retargeting, and two, start engaging with them, create a brand experience, like start talking to them. And I feel like a lot of companies know, like, all right, we know we need to do lead gen, we need to collect information, we need to do that sort of stuff. But a lot of brands are really clueless on really what to do with it after.
It's a great point. A lot of people have been collecting data for years because they know they have to, and then just aren't empowered to do anything with it. And that's where creativity and sales strategy comes in. It's actually much more creative than technical, which is cool. Like, that's the stuff I nerd out about. So I find in my line of work, it is far and few between that people have a great database and they just don't know what to do with it. That would be the dream. We can really help people there. Most of the time it's, I don't have a database, or my database is hodgepodge, who knows? I don't know where it's at. It's not clean. And to the sheer overwhelming effort it would take to go back in and clean that up, even if you could. There's a lot of manpower hours that would go into that, or we just can't guarantee the validity of the data. So what happens is people have been building these databases for, you know, decades, and they have to get rid of all of it and start over because it's not clean.
Right. Is there something that brands or marketers should be focusing on this year to kind of mitigate those issues?
Yeah. If you don't have a practice in place for gathering data, that's another example of where marketing and sales should be working together. Is it a prospect? Is it a client? What information is going to be standard? So what are the 7 to 10 fields we're going to have filled out no matter what? Just put a practice in place now going forward. And then the other critical thing this year and last year that you should be focusing on is consent to reach out to those people. You need opt-ins, because at some point here very soon, right, they're already enacting rules against that, but we need kind of written consent to reach out to those folks in a marketing and sales capacity. So GDPR compliance, you need to have a checkbox and language on your forms. You need to be having those conversations on sales calls. Is it okay if I add you to my email list? We need to be logging opt-ins in that database, in addition to having, you know, data in the field.
Yeah, that's a great point, because another thing I'd see when I work with startups is a lack of a privacy page, the fundamentals. Yeah. And they say, well, what's that for? And I say, it's to tell users what you're collecting, so they're not just blindly handing over your data. And you could be in very big trouble if you're collecting millions of people's data and they don't know where you're storing that. They don't know how you're collecting that or who you're handing that off to. And having those sort of fundamental data privacy, regulatory content on your website, there's no context of where their data is going and how it's being handled.
Yeah, and there's huge legal implications of that. We're going to start to see lawsuit after lawsuit, even looking at like accessibility, for example. If your website is not accessible right now, even if you're not collecting data, there's like a 300% uptick in lawsuits that are settling for about $16,000 a pop, just if your website isn't compliant.
Oh, wow.
So privacy policies are critical. Like, all that legislation will come. It's in place for ADA now, and that's going to come for data privacy as well. So one more thing to think about, not to scare the business owners out there, but data readiness and data governance is going to become not just a nice to have, it's going to be, you know, legally necessary at a very, very soon point. It basically is right now, just where it's more policies and kind of guidelines for data privacy while they figure out what's going to go into law state by state.
Yeah, so business owners should really just be adding this to their to-do list shortly, very shortly.
Right now. Do it right now. Yes.
Yeah, and it's not even too complicated to put into place. There's a lot of consultants, like you mentioned, that will guide you through the process. So reach out to Alex. And, you know, there are plenty of tools out there that'll help build out that sort of regulatory language for your website. So it's not like you need to attend any sort of law program to get that language on your website. It's very straightforward.
It is. And to reframe a little bit, think about yourself as a consumer. It's kind of exciting that we get this level of control to who has our data and what we want to be targeted for. And it's actually quite cool. And the steps are simple enough. You just want to give people the option to opt in or opt out and respect that. And that is a critical part of knowing your audience and your personas anyway. So good marketing and good brand story comes full circle here in the compliance piece. It really does make logical sense. Now how legislation goes about being written and all that, we won't speak to that, but hypothetically, it all makes great sense and it's going to make for a much richer client experience and you're going to have much more success in the sales environment if you follow suit.
Yes, absolutely. Hopefully we saved everyone a few thousand dollars today on,
hope so.
on fines and everyone can get their regulatory policies up to date. And, you know, this was such a great conversation about getting that data in place. So to wrap up today, Alex, what is one takeaway you want listeners to leave with?
Oh, good question. I think even more than data readiness, because that's a long process, your sales and your marketing team should be working together. So that doesn't mean they have one leader necessarily, but it means the leaders of the department should be working together in tandem and working towards common initiatives and use technology to help you do that.
Yes, those departments working hand in hand. It's going to reduce a lot of friction and it's going to lead to even better business outcomes.
Yes.
And before we end the show today, where can people find you online?
Yeah, so I work for Spindustry, which is a larger agency, and I run a division of Spindustry. Spindustry.com is the URL there, called VSG Marketing. We're a Spindustry company. So that is VSGmarketing.io. And then you can find me as a speaker and a thought leader on Instagram at AlexDevine_talks.
Great. I will add that in the show notes for everyone to follow along. Well, Alex, it was great chatting today.
Absolute pleasure, Pat. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Brands Over Brews. If you enjoyed today's episode, subscribe and leave a review. Your feedback means the world to me and it helps others discover the show. You can get a transcribed copy of each episode delivered to your inbox each week by joining our email list at brandsoverbrews.com. If you're interested in joining the show as a guest or want to become one of our valued partners, visit brandsoverbrews.com/contact. If you have any thoughts, questions, or want to connect, you can reach out to me on X at Pat B. Cooper. See you next time.